Hello, and welcome to Creating Cash Flow for February 6th, 2022. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
You're doing really well. Doing really well.
Oh, good.
How about yourself? How is your shoulder arm thing?
It's slowly getting better.
Yeah, but you can sense improvement.
Yes.
Okay. Very happy to hear that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I got your questions. You are a cash flow cat. You offer writing workshops and you coach writers. And first, we must celebrate your victories because you wrote that I had suggested maybe one of the things you could do is record videos of your teaching material for your workshops ahead of time. So folks could like listen to those and then you'd have more time during the actual sessions to do the live engagement and back and forth writing. And you had written here that recording those videos ahead of time has opened up more possibilities and ideas for you. And you've had trouble for a long time doing video solo, you talking into the camera with personality. And I'm so happy to hear that you're like, oh, okay, that worked.
Yes, kind of when I had to do it, I got over all those things that were in the way. So interesting how that is.
Yeah, totally. It's so funny how we have to kind of relearn that again and again, because each new thing is like, I don't know, that's scary for me as well. Yeah. So you have two questions here. One is about you've run a workshop that you've done in the past as a one-day retreat, or you want to do the workshop now as the one-day retreat. That's what I understand, right?
Right. I've done it as a two-hour online workshop, and I've got some interest from people for an online retreat. Mm-hmm. And so I found a way to expand it out to 4 hours where people would have more time to write, and then they'd get feedback on longer pieces of writing. Mm-hmm.
So what is your question for me about it?
Well, I was modeling that with the auditing. I was modeling that after a screenplay workshop that I took where she had a webinar. So I just have to test this with my Zoom if this would work, but have people just pay a lower price to audit, which means they can write along with the prompts and they can watch the workshop, but they have cameras off, mics off. They don't show up as participants at all.
Yeah. And I mean, you could even, like, I don't know anything technically about Zoom, but if you said that everyone who's a participant, cameras on, that's a requirement. Everyone who is an auditor, cameras off. That would just be a very easy way for you then to know who to pay attention to.
Yes. Yeah. So I just have to see if, because sometimes when the cameras are off, you still get the name and the frame. So in a webinar, those people don't even show up on the screen at all. Mm-hmm. So I would just have to see if there's a way for me to adjust that because I don't have the webinar thing. I don't do big webinars, and I would just have 6 people live. Mm-hmm. So then I could have more people who just might want to audit.
Right. I haven't used like the webinar thing before, but you can have a lot of people on the regular Zoom.
Right. But I mean, just in terms of the workshop dynamic, I would just have 6.
Right. Okay. I mean, the audit thing is definitely, you know, it came from kind of like master classes where you'd have the people that the person was actually working with, and then you'd have an audience of paying people who weren't going to be interactive. So that's an old idea that is definitely a way that you can, you know, get people who it's a way to expand it, the affordability of something. as well. So that's a fine idea. Was there anything else that you wanted my feedback on?
Just to run that past you to see if you had any other tweaks for that or things to keep in mind.
No, it seems pretty straightforward. There wasn't anything that I was like, what is she talking about?
Uh-huh.
The thing I want to say is a piece of unsolicited advice. You have not asked me this, but whenever I read stuff from you about like a one-off workshop or this little limited series thing, my question is always, because if you got everyone enrolled that you wanted, six people at kind of the maximum, 10 people at the audit price, you're making around $1,400. In my heart, I'm always looking at this and going, how can you sell something for $1,400 that only one person has to say yes to, instead of trying to get 16 people to say yes to this for that same money? Because that's the coordination of 16 people. That's the, and I know like that's what a workshop is. It's more than one people. And I know you like doing groups, but my, and we don't actually have to talk about this unless you want to, but because I'm, you didn't ask me this, but whenever I think of you, Karen, my thought is, how can you do something that's on an ongoing basis or for a bigger monetary commitment so that you can actually make like chunks of money that you can sock away for retirement? Like, how do you make some money?
Mm-hmm.
That's where my brain goes.
I like
that. But as far as like a workshop, like this is a fine workshop, but it's sort of a lot of effort. And then you get a little bit of money and then you have to do it all over again. Kind of thing.
Well, I'm open to discuss what you're saying. And in fact, I'm kind of moving away from the second question topic because that's going towards how can I do a lower price to get
people?
And I don't want to go that way. And so what I'd rather talk about is raising my hourly rate. And then also whatever thoughts come to mind for you of what you're bringing up. Like, I don't know how to do the ongoing basis or the one off. I don't know how
to do that.
So I'm open.
I'm glad to hear you say that. And that was my thought as well. But here's the thought I really had when I read your second one, because the second question was basically, hey, here's a framework for an even lower price thing for folks. And so my brain is like, I find it interesting because this is not the first time you've presented something similar like this. And so my brain goes, you have a real, and this isn't a bad thing. I'm just sort of pointing it out. So I don't mean to have like the words trigger anything, but you seem to have like an attachment or a real piece of your heart that is very concerned about people not being able to afford your services or to be able to make them super accessible for people. Either that and or a combination of that. And you think it's going to be easier to sell things the lower price they are. It's easier to sell something for a lower price than a higher price.
Well, I remember I already said I'm not going to do the thing.
Yeah, no, I know. But I'm so from the bigger picture perspective, though, I'm noticing.
Yeah, but I'm shifting away from that.
Good.
Thanks to you. So
okay,
I'm already shifting.
Okay,
so we don't have to. I'm not going to defend.
Okay,
that
so we don't have to. Good. So you're, yes, because you've reached a level of expertise. You're very good at what you do. You get great results. People love working for you. So this shift then is really about, I think there's two things for you to kind of wrap your brain around and kind of get really in alignment with. One is that you likely need to define for yourself, who is this audience who are the type of writers? What are the problems they have that they're ready to invest in getting coaching? And this may not be the people you're currently serving. The people currently on your list, the people currently following you on social media may not be those people. And I think in the past, you've been designing your programs for the people you have. What will their market price bear? What will they pay? And I'm like, well, you can also design it of, this is what I want to get paid. Where do I find those people? Who are those people? It's just a different way to frame your business. So I want you to really think about that. Who are these people? What is the thing they're grappling with? Where have they gotten to the point with that where they're like, oh, I need some coaching?
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that I think is required is for you to get more comfortable with being able to charge some real money, to being asked for something that's $2,000. And have you listened to any of the podcast episodes from the money sessions?
Are they on the website or are they on the podcast?
No. So this is a separate podcast that this woman does, and it's called The Money Session.
No.
Okay. I want you to listen to at least 10. Just pick whatever ones you want. They're all very similar, but what it is a podcast for therapists. And each episode, you hear this therapist tell their story of why they once upon a time charged like, oh, I couldn't, you know, people need help and they and how they were able to move through their money issues and really charge a rate that enables them to live like a rate that so they can live their life, not even extravagantly, just like, because therapists are notorious for really severely undercharging. But if you listen to enough of those episodes, you start to really go, okay, so this is the pattern. And what do I see in my own brain that is similar to that?
Mm-hmm. And it's called Money Sessions?
The Money Sessions. So 10 episodes. Listen to that. Think about, who's this person? Who are these writers? What challenge are they facing that they are ready to invest in a really good coach? And so come back with that kind of like description, and nothing, you have to like, doesn't have to be pretty, just like this problem, this is, and ask yourself, like, what are the issues that I'm best at helping people through, the blocks that I'm best at busting through? Like, what do I really want to help people with? What lights me up? And what was the third thing? Oh yeah. What might the structure be for something that costs like $2,000? One of the things I've recommended to you in the past is an ongoing group that people pay for monthly or quarterly or annually, that they commit to being a part of, that's just established on the calendar, because that's recurring income that you can kind of count on, you know, because you have, you know, who's, it'll fluctuate, but you basically have like a good number of people. I want you to think about that, but I also want you to think of like, what is a package that I can offer that's like a $2,000 package? Could be higher than that. I'm just pulling that number. Mm-hmm. Could be lower. I don't know. Because I want you, when you do attract a client, for that to be a meaningful amount of money instead of someone who's just investing like a $300 once.
Well, I don't know if I shared, I hadn't done this before, but I just went through the entire first draft of a 90,000 word novel with a writer, and he paid me my hourly. So it ended up being like $4,500 for the novel. So that, and now I know what that entails. I don't know. I now know what the numbers are, what, how many hours it took me to read, how many hours to meet with him. Mm-hmm. And so I know the ratio now. Mm-hmm. And I know that it, the way I worked with him, I didn't tell him, oh, it's going to be this much. It was right. these increments. And then he would just tell me if he wanted to keep me to keep reading or not.
Right.
So I'd work for 4 hours and meet with him for 1 hour. So I was billing him for 5 hours.
Great.
At a time.
Uh-huh.
And it probably was a total of 30 hours. Mm-hmm. So that, and that was just over time. So now I have a template for mm-hmm. that. And I know what it looks like with a good writer, and it would cost more with a not good writer. Mm-hmm. So, cause there's more to do. Mm-hmm. And so that gave me kind of a minimum, and also the experience mm-hmm. of doing it. And he was really happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a step. And then I'm attempting to do like this writer's lounge thing. That's like a regular thing. And mm-hmm. It's kind of like, I have to build it first and then know what I can offer before I can offer a monthly thing. I am offering that twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
the writer's lounge.
Right. And yeah. that, and so I don't know what another monthly thing could be. Yeah.
I wouldn't have more than one. That's another thing. You have a lot of offers, lots of offers. I want you to have less offers. It's like, you can work with me like this, or you can work with me like this. Now, let me offer, I'm just doing a hypothetical here, just so people listening can be like, oh, you could do it that way too. Just what's the hourly rate that you charge the novelist?
$160.
Okay. And you were doing it in, let me go for my calculator. You were doing it in 5 hour increments. There's nothing yes. wrong with how you were doing it, by the way. I'm just showing you a way. Okay. Times five. So you were getting kind of like $800 every 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone approached you with another book
mm-hmm.
or a similar type of work, you could also say, great. I'd be happy to take you on. When I take on new book clients, the initial investment is $1,400. I'm just making these numbers up, divided by it. No, it would be higher than that. It would be $2,000. That gets you 10 hours, 1 hour of which is a conversation for us to have. And that will give you a sense of what my feedback is like. It will give you some really solid ideas if you just want to take it from there and go. But then if you do decide you would like me to work with you more, we continue at an hourly rate of $160, which is less.
Uh-huh.
Then so they see that as like a, oh,
I see.
Less. But you're getting a chunk of money up front
mm-hmm.
for you to put in that initial, and you can, it doesn't have to be 10 hours. It could be, but it's sort of like, if I'm going to take this on and fit it into my schedule, wrap my brain around your project, wrap my brain around what you want, give it attention, prepare my notes for you, that is a packaged price. And then we can continue on in increment, and you can say in increments of 5 hours each, but the hourly rate drops to blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm. And so is there a way I could do that with the same ratio that I know works for me, which is 4 hours of reading to 1 hour of meeting, as opposed to 9 hours of reading and 1 hour of meeting?
Sure. You could say that's 8 hours of reading and 2 hours of us meeting. And okay. We'll meet, I'll work on it. We'll meet, I'll work on it some more. We'll meet again. By the end of that second meeting, you'll know if this is helpful, if you want more, but then you're getting a chunk of money paid in full up front
mm-hmm.
for this. And you're getting more, let's see, 2000.
Yeah, that's going to be more.
Divided by 10 is 200. And then you can say your rate drops to 180 per hour or whatever you're going to raise it to. And if you're going to raise your rates higher than that, just bump up the initial price to $2,500.
Mm-hmm. And then how detailed would I get on the website with this?
Oh, I would just have a little paragraph that says, you know, another thing I do is I work with folks who are working on a novel, and mm-hmm. what they want me to do is read, give feedback, and you know, have a live session where we talk through it and give feedback. And I've done this before. It's been very helpful. Maybe you have a little testimonial from that guy. Mm-hmm. And you don't even have to put price. If inquiries, email me. Email okay. me if you're interested. And then you can explain it to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I never know about those packages of putting the price. When I go to websites, I like to see what the price is.
You can. Uh-huh. You can totally say, this is what I do with novelists.
Uh-huh.
For each new book.
Mm-hmm.
A $2,000 investment, and that's 8 hours of me reading, 2 hours of us meeting together in two separate sessions. Yeah, mm-hmm. but I like putting the price on there. It's like, then they can figure it out and figure out how they're going to get the money and everything.
And I kind of would like to read less if I haven't seen it before, because if it's a mess, I know that it's going to be a different estimate. I have to see how well they're writing to know how long it's going to take. And if I have that giant chunk, that's like a lot to get. That's like more than I need to see to okay. know.
So then what do you, this is really important. Okay. So for everybody listening, I'm not just getting in the weeds with Karen. This is an interesting question. How do you set up an initial, I call these kind of like intake packages, where you're working with a new client and you want it to be a little bit more money up front in case they never continue with you?
Right.
So, but how do you design it so that it fits? So, because you could drop the price to $1,000 and say, we have one meeting and I spend, you don't even have to say how much time you spend on it. You can just say, I will devote time to getting familiar with your work and blah, 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 blah. And then we will have a meeting and I will offer you the feedback. I mean, what was the novelist asking you for feedback for on that first meeting? Like, is it good? What should change?
No, like structure. It was like developmental, like structure. And
you didn't have to read the whole book. You just read a part of it, right?
Well, I would respond. I was reading and responding as I went along so that I was letting him know what was clear to me, what wasn't clear, what he could move around.
Right. But when you very first started with those first 4 hours of reading, he knew you were only going to invest 4 hours of reading.
I actually just, for the first session, I just read 20 pages.
Okay. So you can say, you know, The first session is me reading enough to get an idea of where you're going and where I think, you know, feedback can mm-hmm. be given. And then we meet for an hour and I give you feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So that's left at your discretion.
Okay.
How much you want to read. But they're paying an amount of money
mm-hmm.
to... So for that very first session, how many hours did you actually invest in those 20 pages? I read it and then you thought about it and gave feedback.
Yes, I didn't do well on that first session because it took like an hour. I think we met for half an hour. I think I read for an hour, but it gets slower. I could read 20 pages an hour in the front end if it's good, and then it gets slower because I'm referencing back over the rest of the text.
Of course. Uh-huh.
And so then it drops down to like 12 to 16 pages an hour.
Mm-hmm. Right. So what would be this initial package that you would offer, and what would you want the price point to be? It includes you reading. It includes you thinking about it. It includes you gathering your thoughts for feedback, and then a session to deliver your feedback.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It should be like 1,000 or 1,500. Okay. And then
let's make it 1,000. And then, you know, you're on average, I think it would probably be an hour session meeting with the person.
Right. So it has to be at least an hour.
As long as you, Karen, are able to keep it under like 4 hours, you're getting $250 an hour.
Mm-hmm. Then that would be the 4 hours plus 1 hour for the 1,000 instead of.
I was thinking 4 hours total. I was thinking
four hours total. Okay.
Like, but it's about 1,000. You, your profit depends on you keeping your reading time tight.
Right. But this is me finding out. So that's some cushion for me to find out.
Yeah, exactly.
What it is.
If you read an extra hour, the price per hour goes down to your $200 an hour, which is still more than 160.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll wiggle those numbers around. Yeah. I'll see what you mean.
But do you understand the concept of like,
yes,
this is a chunk, that you give me for us to get started, and then you can hire me by the hour, mm-hmm. but in chunks of 4 or 5 hours, however you want. Mm-hmm.
Right. And then otherwise I've just been offering like a 1 hour session or a 90 minute session
mm-hmm.
for those lower prices.
You mean to just people who want to hire you?
Yeah. Like people in the workshop, they'll meet with me for right. like, and say, give me like 20 pages. So then that's 90 minutes.
Okay. Okay. And I would assume that when people are current clients of yours, just like in cash flow, people in cash flow can have a private with me at a lower rate mm-hmm. because I've already kind of wrapped my brain around you and kind of we mm-hmm. share a common language. But then I'd also ask you, if someone just is referred to you, comes off the street, isn't currently in a class, can they hire you for an hour, or do you need to offer them a package of like, we'll need 3 sessions or we'll need this much? It's you and your expertise telling them this mm-hmm. is what you actually need. I know you want an hour, but that means nothing. Like, do they need to buy 3 hours? Do they need to buy, like, what do they need to buy?
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to think about that too.
Think about packages more. Mm-hmm. And then the people in the workshop, I've actually been discounting the sessions so that they're paying like $120 an hour. And I would like to raise that so they can still get a discount, but it's a higher
right. price. I think that is fine. You can totally do that. You just say at the end of the first quarter of this year, my rates are going up to this, or whenever you want to do that. You can absolutely do that. Remember, one of the most important pieces of guidance I wrote in that cash flow program is how to set your base rate. Your discount rate should be the rate you actually want.
Right. And yeah. And it was for a while, but right. now it's been years. No, it's
not. Yeah. So it's time. It's mm-hmm. just time.
And then what kind of jump would I take from 160 to what?
I trust that you will listen to the Money Sessions podcasts.
Oh, okay.
Think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want for you that I don't think you have quite yet is an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. I know. I am trying.
We're all you, but in an ecosystem, all of your prices kind of are connected to each other and fit. So it's like, this is the price you get if you're in a workshop. This is the price you get if you're just coming to me on a project per project basis. If it's a whole book, this is what how we're going to start. And all the prices kind of make sense in relation to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're getting there. Don't worry that I'm not at all like criticizing. I'm just like, you are completely capable of having a business that is very, very profitable and works like that. And you're getting there. I think this is the year you can totally create that.
Okay. So that's
the homework I gave you is the first step. And then we can talk about what you've decided on and stuff.
Okay.
Okay.
Great.
Very excited.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
you're very welcome. Very welcome. Anise. Hello. Anise is a cash flow kitten. She's a wedding choreographer. She might be a body buddy. Oh my gosh. A body butter maker. We don't know yet. Possibly. Hello. Good to see you again.
Hello.
Hello. So your victory, you wrote that you pushed yourself to go past your comfort zone. You drove to Malibu because typically you get nervous for longer drives, but it was gorgeous. And you spent a day on set and you had a wonderful time filming. So yay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Love it. Okay. So lots of questions. So right now you have your wedding website. And if people want to look at it, it's the letter A, shines, shines.wixsite, wixsite.com. Okay. So the questions you had about that was, you keep changing the name.
Yeah.
And then you had the video. I watched the video. Was that video filmed for this or was it filmed for something else?
That's definitely a place filler. That's not the video. Okay.
Okay, great.
Laptop is going to die. That's not the video for
okay.
This. It's just holding.
Okay, great. Place. But it looks good. Now, the only thing I want to point out is that in the section where you say the offering.
Yes.
The way it is if my desktop screen is fully, if the window with your mm-hmm. website in it on is fully expanded on my desktop, then I see the three columns, one that says the offering, one that says wedding choreography package, and then the third column that says add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
If I shrink my window, the columns all collapse onto one another. And all the words are on top of one another. So I want you to look at, make sure it looks good on mobile.
Yeah.
Any other devices, an iPad, like you want to check everything, different browser windows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the wedding, I don't know if it's the font, but I missed the fact that you actually had the $1,000 price on there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So maybe that needs to go on its own line.
Yeah.
Or be bigger. I don't know.
Oh, I see what you're saying with the smush because I just made mine smaller.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the only thing. Otherwise, it all looks really good. Love it. Love it. Love it. So you're close. That's fantastic. Pick a name. Change the name too. It doesn't matter. Just pick something, but don't let that stop you.
Okay.
Okay. Unless you're going to buy the URL.
I am eventually.
Okay.
But I'm okay with kind of sending it to, because the main reason I'm like, I want to buy the URL so then I can send to like other people, like connectors and that kind of stuff and be like, oh, can I write a piece, you know?
Right.
Like we talked about and I was thinking I should probably have a name by then.
Okay. Yeah. For anybody listening, if you're sort of like, I haven't decided on what the business's name should be, you could buy a URL that could be something else, a niece choreography.
Uh-huh.
And then when you do decide on the name for your business, you buy that URL and you just make sure that a niece choreography redirects.
Oh, okay.
The new URL of the website. So you replace it, but whoever your host is, GoDaddy, Bluehost, whatever that you've bought that URL with, you're able to go in there and say, hey, whenever someone types this into a search engine, can you send them over here?
Oh, okay. Okay.
That's called a redirect. They type in the old name, it moves it. It sends people to the new name. Okay. You could have people type in the name of your website and have them end up on my website. You just redirect it to my website name. Yeah. So
that definitely gives me a relief of like, okay, if I pick it, I'm could change.
Right.
It.
So let's say you write a guest blog post and the link in there is to Anise Choreography.
Yeah.
And then you change your website, that the link will still work because you've redirected and said, anybody who clicks this old link, send them over here to the new website.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah. So then you asked, so here you are with this wedding business. What should be your next steps? Reaching out to wedding sites and podcasts. Should you already have articles written? If you're going to write something for a particular website, I think it's probably better if you approach them with ideas.
Okay.
Like, and including podcasts too. Like, we could talk about this.
Okay.
I could write about this or this or this, whatever you think your audience, whatever of these three you think your audience would be most interested in. And they could be like, oh, why don't you do this? Or instead of those, why don't you do this?
Yeah.
And that way then you can, because if they want it to be slightly different or longer or shorter word count, then you wouldn't have already put in all that work.
That does make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I would sort of approach people with ideas and pit, which are called pitches. Hey, I noticed you haven't talked about this on your site yet. I could do an article on this or this, and three ideas is good. They can pick one. That's how I do it. Then I'd write the article.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And yes, as far as the next steps, now that you have, and I would remove the video you have now. You don't need it as a placeholder. Like, you don't want anybody seeing that video.
Oh, no, no.
It's not bad. It's just not for the site. So yeah, you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
You just need a URL by something. So it's not Wix.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And now it is really about reaching out to let people know you exist and you're available. So it's making lists. Who are the, you know, coordinators and venues and just, and starting to say, hi. Just want to let you know I exist in case you have couples who are, you know, maybe they're not even necessarily dancers, but blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Okay.
And I know there's once upon a time, there was an American, like an association of wedding coordinators or so, cause that's how I found the woman who helped me with my wedding. So there's like organizations and clusters of these people. And it's just about starting to say hi.
Mm-hmm.
Think about it like you just started work in a huge company. So you're in the choreography department of this huge company and you're wandering up to the accounting floor where all the accountants are working. And you're just like, hey, I'm Anise. I'm from choreography. If you ever need anything from there, I'm just on the fourth floor. You're just like introducing yourself to the people in the building.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel when you think about doing this part of the business?
I think it definitely feels more nerve-wracking than like the website's just like, oh, yay. Uh-huh. The story's like, oh, I definitely get nervous when thinking about like crafting the emails, and yeah, just telling people that it's something that I do. So
yeah, this is the outreach.
Yeah,
nervous part, because there's a chance to be rejected. This is where you really have to do the mindset work and tell yourself stories every day. Like, my people are out there. I'm going to find them. This is how I find them. Not everybody's going to be a good match, but I know my right people are out there. This is how I'm going to find some clients. I'm really curious to see who my people are going to be. Won't this be fun when it's all up and running? Like, you have to kind of cheerlead yourself a little bit.
I think I've been kind of hard on myself because like Valentine's Day is coming up and I'm like, oh, having a Valentine's Day event would have probably been a good way to like get couples or something. So I've been like, oh, feeling like, I don't know. Like the idea of like missed opportunity.
Okay. I think that's a really good idea for later.
Yeah.
Because, and here's what, where my brain goes, the amount of work for you to put together some sort of event or some sort of happening, even if it's just you videotaping a couple, or the amount of work to do that when you have a very small audience to share that with. I would rather you take all that effort and spend a day calling wedding coordinators and introducing yourself to people who can actually get you clients. Mm-hmm. Events are kind of one step removed, where it's like, I hope people see this and I hope they get inspired to contact me. And you, when you're starting out, it takes more effort for you to market to the actual people who might be your customers, marketing to your clients. It is far better to put your efforts to market towards funnel people. Mm-hmm. If you get one wedding coordinator who likes you and who connects with you, they can send you clients for years. But getting one client, that's just kind of one and done. Yes, they might refer you, but then they have to have like friends who are also getting married, or eventually, like, it's just much more hit and miss.
Yeah.
You need funnel people.
Okay.
Who are meeting, who are also doing their own outreach to meet brides and grooms, and then can send them your way.
Yeah.
So instead of like, oh, missed opportunity, Valentine's Day, it's like, that's a great idea I just had, file it away for later. That's not what I should be focused on right now. I'm going to stay focused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like when you said that about amount of work, I'm like, it is a lot of work. So.
Yes. Oh my gosh. But to someone who has the skills and knows how to like do an event.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have done things like that before, understand how to coordinate something and could do it. That to you feels more familiar and safe.
It does.
And oh, look, I'm doing something for my business. But I'm like, I know this part of it over here doesn't feel as familiar and doesn't feel as safe, but it is the shorter path to cash than that. So I'm looking for efficiency.
Yeah.
And the fewest steps between you and booking people.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so I encourage you to set some metrics for yourself. Okay. And you can do it weekly. Every week, I am going to reach out to 5 brand new people, or every month, February, March, April, I'm going to reach out to this many people.
Okay.
But really, February and March is your time to start reaching out. This is the thing you should be focused on most. People need to know you exist. And keep promoting on social to the individuals and keep letting everybody you know in your sphere definitely know that you're open for business. But it's time for you to introduce yourself to more people. Now, one email is not going to do the trick. I get emails a lot every single week from people like, hey, I found your business. Do you want this thing? Hey, I do this. And it's like, I don't know who you are.
Yeah.
But that's not the problem. The problem isn't the fact that they're sending me an email. That's great. They're doing marketing. Like, they're reaching out. They've identified me as the kind of client they would want, but they only do it once. And what's interesting is those who do follow up with me, follow up with an email that's kind of along the same lines as their first email, like, oh, did you get that email? And it's like, they don't send me a video that they made. They don't send me a voicemail message of like, hey, I'm Rick. I sent you an email last week, but sometimes it's like, who's this Rick person? Send me an email. So I wanted you to hear my voice. I'm a real person. I've done this before. Like, that would get me a little more like, oh, okay, well, here's that Rick guy. I like his voice. He seems really cool. Maybe I'll look up his website. Like, I'll take some action to suss them out. There's also services. There's many of these services. I know one of them is called Boomerang, I think, or maybe I'm thinking of something else, where you can film a video. So this, I saw this used by a coach. She had had people in her program, and then she was using some sort of software that she was trying to get them, oh, you've worked in my 12-week program. Now, do you want to work on my VIP program? So she's trying to upsell them. Mm-hmm. So she had a bit of software that everyone who went to the VIP page and just kind of looked at it and checked it out, she would be notified. So then she made individual videos for each of those people. And she had like a little post-it note with their name on it, like Christine Aller. And this service, this video, personalized videos, if I'll find a link and put it inside cash flow in the community. What it does is it allows you to film a little video. Hey, Christine, I heard you were blah, 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 blah. But it allows you to embed in the email that you would send me a little image. I think it was, maybe it was a GIF of her holding the post-it note with my name on it. Of course, I'm going to watch that video.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, this is made just for me. Click.
Yeah.
So you could use, I want you to think of first an email, then a video, then a voicemail message. Like, how do you introduce yourself to the person more than just once?
Okay.
And you know, you don't stalk them, but you do it a week and then maybe another 12 days and then maybe another 12 days, but you just sort of gently go, hey, yeah, I know this is the third time I've contacted you, but third time might be the charm. And I just want to let you know that blah, blah, whatever. Now, here's the other thing that people don't do and why mostly I just dismiss the emails that come into my inbox. Those emails are all about them. Hi, I'm Anise. I'm a wedding coordinator. I want you to refer me to your people. I do this, and I do these kind of dances. And it's like you haven't even acknowledged who I am. I just got one of these emails today, and it was, hey, I noticed that you've started a new podcast, and I've been to the, I'm like, first of all, not a new podcast. Second of all, you didn't even state what the name of the podcast was. I know you didn't listen to any episodes. Instead, what if you said, oh my gosh, I have been enjoying episodes of your Creating Cash Flow podcast. I especially liked that one episode where you're talking about that. And I see from your website that you've really been in business quite some time. Maybe there's something I have, like, tell me you've done some research on me before you send me an email. So this day of sitting in front of your computer making a list of, you know, wedding coordinators, and then looking at their websites. Did they, you guys go to the same college? Is there anything about them that you could be like, oh my God, and I love that you did this. And, you know, and I would of course start with all the ethnic diversity, because that's a point of common interest that you already have in common. So look up all those guys and gals first and reach out to them. Mm-hmm. And just think of ways of connection. Sometimes you can't find them, but it might be just, I really like your philosophy, or I really like you, the way you've done these weddings. And oh my God, that picture on your website with the flowers and that garland was phenomenal, or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Make it personal. And then say how, like, I would love to add this element. If you ever have couples, especially if they're, you know, worried about dancing, but they want to include that. I love working with people for whom this is going to be a new experience. You get the gist?
Yeah. Yeah.
The most important thing is for you to keep your mind more positive of like, yeah, I can do this. My people are out there. I'm going to find clients. This is going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk body butter. For everyone listening here on the call, if you have a question today that you would like to ask me, raise your hand. That just lets me know how to manage the time, just so you know, if you also want to talk today. I'm just addressing the questions that I got in advance. FYI. Okay. So the main question you were asking me, Anise, was like, you're wondering if right now you should get a job, like for money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then another thing you mentioned is you started making body butter for fun. And of course, people start like, oh, are you selling that? Like, can I get some? That's a very natural thing. It is difficult to build two things at once. So the whole product business is kind of a whole different world in some respects than the service business of the choreography. And if you're thinking of doing the body butter for money, for like cash, I wouldn't say that's the way to go, because you're starting something just like, and you're already starting up the wedding choreography. And that is a $1,000 client versus a $20 client. So you can like make a double batch when you make it for yourself and then sell off the extra. Like, that's kind of okay.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't necessarily turn my attention to that until the wedding thing got off the ground, or you were going to scrap the wedding thing entirely and really go all in on the body butter. Because there's a lot of moving parts to a side business of any kind. And you already have a lot of moving parts over here and all the extension that you have to do. That's going to take up a lot of work. Plus you've training right now. So if you need money, get money from something that's easy, that you clock in, clock out, only use half your brain for. You can conserve your energy. It doesn't have to be fun. Just get some money. So yeah. So like, if you're like, I need income and I need it now, sometimes the best thing to do is just get a little job, become an employee, do your wedding stuff then on the weekends at night, fit it in around the schedule. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah.
How do you feel when I sort of say it like that?
I mean, it definitely makes sense, because the thinking is like, oh yeah, this thing could make money, but like you're saying, it's also a lot of things to figure out. And I would want to do it more small batch anyways. So I don't know if I'd want to depend on that for the like income to come in. So that's when I was thinking, like, maybe I need to get a job because something I know will bring in money. Like, and I don't have to put it all together.
Exactly. You don't have to hustle for that.
Yeah.
It's just there. You show up, then they pay you.
Yeah.
And it's not uncommon for me when, you know, people come to me and if they're very, very, very stressed about their side hustle or it's not working or they're not getting what they need from it and they need money, I will say you need to get a job so that we have some space to then figure out and get the side hustle moving and grooving. But it's really hard to do something when you're choking, your hand is on your own throat.
Yeah.
You're feeling the pressure. It's like, you got to take that hand off first. Mm-hmm. And if you need some income coming in now, find a job. Because the body butter, it's just going to be, it's a side thing and it's a ramp starting and starting is always up and down, not consistent.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When I first started organizing, I also had another job because I just wanted my bills to be paid. And so then I wasn't so super desperate of like, where's my next organizing client, which allowed me to have a real chill, like, great, I can totally work with you because I knew the bills were paid.
Yeah.
And then there came a time where it was like, okay, I want to see if I can do it. See if I can do it with organizing. And I left that job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely makes sense. It's like, it won't be as exciting, but I feel like it will get me. Yeah. Just like one, structure, and two, just some things like that I know will come in.
Totally. Doesn't have to be exciting.
Yeah.
I want your dance career that you are trying to build and the choreography business as a subsidiary of your dancing career. I want that to be the exciting part of your life.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid the job becomes exciting because then you're going to be drawn to that.
Yeah.
You just want the job to be a job and you want the dance thing to still own your heart and be pulling you towards that.
Yeah. That's helpful.
Good. I'm very glad. Excellent. Okay. You can do this. Keep your mind, come to our mindset calls if you need the refreshment of that, but, and re-listen to Miata's mindset course Inside Abundance Bound. And there's other mindset podcasts in the resource section of the Creating Cash Flow dashboard. So there's feeding your mind with that stuff helps. Thanks. Thank you. Good to see you. Britt.
Hey. Hi.
Hi.
There's a plane going by, so it's a little loud all of a sudden. Sorry. I have a question that it's more of like a brainstorming ask. It's related to many months ago I asked about NFTs and about what it might mean to do a digital face paint of people. So what I've kind of conceptualized is that it's called face paint from afar, which means that I could paint someone's face. I would paint their picture. I'll show you what they look like. I've done a couple of like ones that kind of can help you understand. Like it's their face, but then I've, like, he was talking about how he wants a relationship where it feels like they're on a teeter-totter. And so I painted, you know, him on a teeter-totter with someone, and, you know, so it's their face, mm-hmm. but then I've painted on them. Mm-hmm. And so I've also done this with, I'm just giving you the lay of the land first. Mm-hmm. So for Circus Person, my short film, I painted, the cast and crew's digital face paint for the website. So, you have like, I made it, like it's them. There's a picture of them that I've outlined essentially, and then I face paint them. So here's my thought is it might be nice if I had on my website a place where someone could purchase a face paint from afar from me. But the ultimate goal would be something you suggested, which was for a charity event, I could offer a face paint from afar as a charity auction or so I guess where I'm coming out from it is like I want the price point to be high enough so that a charity feels like they're getting a benefit, but also I mean, I don't necessarily need the money to sustain my life. So I'd like to, I mean, my hunch is to, this is maybe sounds crazy to me as I'm saying it, but to make them like $1,000 for a face paint. And then I would turn it into an NFT. And I have no idea what that technology is, to be honest. But it would essentially be, I just don't know if anyone's done this really, which is just like a face paint as an NFT.
Well, I know they've done art. It's the same thing. You're creating a piece of art. They've definitely done that, with far less personal things, just computer art. But And what's your hesitancy around that? What's your like concern?
There's no hesitancy actually. Like I'm gonna put it on my website at some point, and I'm just curious how to label it, like what price point to put on there exactly. I mean, I guess I was just gonna ask how to talk about it.
So this is, I think that the price point is whatever you want, because this is a novelty item. This is a luxury item. This is an art purchase. So there's no real like marketplace framework for it.
I
If
see.
it appeals to the person, if it's just something that they have the discretionary income for, and they dig you, and they're like, oh, this is so cool, or this would be a really cool gift to give to somebody who has everything. I would definitely use that phrase. This is one of those gifts that can be given to someone who already has everything. Because there are people looking for those kind of gifts, and so the price is just whatever you want the price to be. And then I think the turning of it into an NFT is almost like an added bonus to the whole experience. This is an opportunity for you to own an original, something of our own creation, because they can, offer you ideas and inspiration that you then put into the piece of art. And then it can be their first NFT that they either give, just, have as a buy this as a gift for somebody, or they have their first thing, which they can resell. They know how much they've paid for it. They could possibly resell it. I mean, if someone,
There's also the option in this app that I use to paint where it makes it into a video of the process of painting it, which I think might be better as the NFT than than just the still image.
Oh, I think so. I think that would be a really cool thing to see. But the interesting thing about, and we're just pulling this out, the $1,000 price point. Someone who can afford that, likely in this day and age, has a platform of their own. So, if Patton Oswalt gets a face painting from you, he can always sell the NFT or more than that. Like, so in the world of the people who would be purchasing this for you, that price is fine. Whatever you charge is just whatever you charge.
Right. I mean, and then there's the other idea that I would just charge $100 for it, and then I would be doing a lot of them, which wouldn't be, or I don't know if I would be doing a lot, but I could be doing more as, but then I would be doing 10 for the, you know, for the price of just one. So I guess, okay, well, it doesn't matter what I charge then.
Here's what I would say to you specifically. Because this is not something where you need to generate this income. And because we don't know what your immediate future holds, but we can kind of guess, hopefully, with the fingers crossed, that there's a trajectory here and there's work to be also had in a higher profile in the future. So I think it's perfect for you just to be like, I don't know, $1,000. And just put it up there and see what happens, because it might just be the perfect price for you.
Well, and the idea would be that someone could bid on it for a charity event, and like the charity gets $1,000, and it doesn't take me that much time to do it.
Right.
Maybe a couple of hours, and it would be fun for me to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I like the thought process. I think that you're right. It needs to be something hefty, especially because you probably will leverage it with charity in the future. I think that $100 sounds like you're kind of face painting on the side. Like,
yeah.
This feels special. And in the future, there's an opportunity for it to become more and more and more special. And I think the package of the video and the NFT, that whole makes it like a little cool thing someone is buying for themselves or buying for somebody else.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Oh, so I love your thinking. And somebody out there will be able to teach you how to do an NFT. Yeah.
Thanks.
And by the way, that might also be something that organically, when you feel it, you can toss off in an interview or something. Like, you can just slip it in.
I'm going on Kelly Clarkson next week, and I've painted Conan O'Brien's face, and I thought I might just make one for Kelly as like, just being like, I can't paint your face, but I made this, and just like give it to her. Is that too cheesy?
No, I don't think it's cheesy at all.
Okay.
No, but yes, because
I won't talk about like the price point or whatever of it.
No.
I painted your face since we can't do it during COVID time.
And then she's like, "Oh my gosh, do you do this?" You go, "Yeah, I do it."
It's basically as a fix because I can't really paint a lot of people's faces during COVID.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just sort of let it out there like that, because then you might get response from, you know, people of like, oh, my God, can you do that for me? And then you would just be like, sure, it's this much. Yeah, I love that. But I was just thinking that NFT is just such a, in the zeitgeist, and nobody knows what it is, but everyone's talking about it. So just the fact that you're sort of, you have something in your life that incorporates that. Piece of interest.
Well, that it's digital art is like the first most thing. And then there's all this controversy around like whether NFTs are good for the environment or not. So I don't really want to get into that, but it would just be like a JPEG gift or a PDF gift. Okay.
Cool. Yeah, start there and then decide on the NFT stuff later.
Okay, cool.
I love it. Have fun on Kelly Clarkson.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Excited. Yeah, totally. Cool. Anyone else? We have some time.
Hi. I've been listening to the course and it's so good.
Oh, glad
you it's been really inspiring. And so I basically have kind of, since we talked last, and you invited me to kind of spend the amount of time that I lost work for that other thing when I raised my price, and they were like, okay, fine, but now you have 4 hours less. So I have been spending that time listening to the course, and also really kind of trying to get comfortable with this idea of charging money for my breathwork side business service. But it's very exciting too, because I actually booked a job. I'm in Chicago on set. Whoa! So I also have been distracted by that. And it was really interesting, because in the course, you talk about how when you start giving attention to the side business and forming structure, like it feels like, so I was just like, oh, wait, okay, it's actually maybe a good thing that I'm focusing on the acting, because this is what I want to be doing. And yes. So it just was like a real life experience of kind of negotiating the two.
Yes. No, this is what we want.
Yeah.
This so is my what whole want. Goal with everyone for a side business is that one day you don't have to have the side business anymore, because the thing you want to do is what you're getting paid for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So anyway, so I'm still very much at the beginning of things, and but I'm feeling really excited. I think the thing that I was very focused on other artists and other actors, because I obviously see myself in them and I want to help. But I actually am kind of thinking that maybe the whole your clients are not your friends made sense to me too. And I think I might actually kind of shift my idea of an ideal client to being actually somebody who isn't an actor, like maybe more of like a professional, or not that actors aren't professionals, but like more of like a traditional professional job, to kind of be an opportunity to regulate the body and kind of de-stress. So that's something that I'm thinking about, maybe transitioning the focus of my audience. And, but that being said, like, I also really want to work with actors too. I'm just feels expensive for actors.
Okay. This is good. I've actually been thinking about you, June, and I was really happy you raised your hand. For those of you who are either here or, you know, listening to this in the future, if you go back and listen, I think it was last time we met, so the previous session to this one, I threw out some numbers to you. I think it was like 200 and something per breath work, like 3 hour, some sort of structure. And the price was a big leap from where you were at.
Yeah.
And I really want you and the people listening know that the reason I did that is I really was trying to stretch your brain of being like, that's possible. Like, whoa, how does that feel in my body? Like, how, where would I have to get to with my money mindset to be able to charge that? I did that purposefully. I do that a lot. With Gregory and his training, I'm like, it needs to be this much, because I really want to stretch your brain. That said, it is okay to decide to start at a rate that you feel more in alignment with for your first couple of clients.
Okay.
The first couple of clients. And then we want to see if you can get it up to a price point that really is bringing in significant money, money that you can do something with, not just like little bits and pieces of money. So I think for Gregory, it was like, I don't know what I said to him at first, but I think he dialed it down, because it's great. He needs to feel like, okay, I'm good with this price. So I don't want you to think that you have to go big necessarily. But the other thing I want to clarify is when I said your friends are not necessarily your clients, I didn't mean that as like your friends are actors, so actors aren't necessarily your clients. Mm. I'm saying your friends who are perhaps at the same economic level as you are not necessarily your clients.
Right.
Your clients don't have a money issue. They have an anxiety, overwhelm. I'm disconnected from my breathing, you know, my breath and my gut, my somatic experience. I'm all in my head. That's their problem, not money. So they can afford to pay you to help them with their problem. You want the money because the breath work isn't your problem. You've got that dialed in for yourself. That's why you can help other people. So that's what I mean by your friends economically. Your economic circle is not necessarily your client circle.
Okay. That's helpful.
Now, and I do think that your clients, your ideal clients, are probably going to be creatives and entrepreneurs, okay, including performing artists. Performers, creatives, and entrepreneurs. Why? Because those three lifestyles are a roller coaster. It's not a linear experience. Your finances go up and down. Your opportunities go up and down. You know, the trajectory of the careers go up and down. Projects come and then they disappear. And then new projects come. It's a roller coaster of a life. So it's up to you to learn ways to regulate yourself, come back to a neutral baseline so that you can make really good decisions and have the capacity to operate at the level that you want to operate. And I can help you do that.
Mm.
So I think that's, so when people say, oh my gosh, what do? You can say, I help people who have like a roller coaster of a life, entrepreneurs, creatives, performers, ups and downs. I help them learn how to get themselves back to baseline so they have the capacity to do what they want to do in the world. That's how I would explain what you do. And the word breathwork doesn't come until someone goes, oh, well, how do you do that? Oh, well, then.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 That's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
And there are actors who are earning money,
yeah,
and who want a new experience and want a new set of tools. And it's like acting class is great and therapy is great and whatever is great, but they also are like, yeah, I need to feel, I want to feel that. And it might even be actors. When you're working with performers, it's not necessarily even how do you calm yourself before an audition, but it might be you're working on a really intense role.
Yeah.
How do you let some of that go when you're transitioning, then going out to dinner with friends? Like, how do you transition from on set to your real life with people who don't want the intensity that you have on set? Because some people have a really hard time letting that go.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean, everyone listening, for when you're looking at what are the problems your clients are facing. No one is walking around going, you know what? I need to get better with my breath. No, yeah. No one is saying that. But people are saying like, wow, I have a hard time letting that go. Or if I have a really intense acting class, it follows me around for a couple of days and messes with my energy, you know, or this or that, you know, entrepreneurs, it's like, I have to, you know, lead a team. And it's really hard to do that when I'm dysregulated and like overwhelmed and frazzled. Don't use the word dysregulated. Nobody uses that, but like use their words, frazzled, overwhelmed, like tense, anxiety. Yeah.
Mm, okay.
I can help with that. I can help you with that. We do three sessions. It's this much money. Let's go.
Yeah. I was getting pretty comfortable with the three sessions for $500,
mm-hmm,
with the first session being $200. And if they hate it, they can walk away. But then, mm-hmm, if they proceed, then it's like $150 for the second two. that Love was starting it. To be like, I can own that. It's so interesting because I'm making money as an actor right now. Like, and my team is like negotiating and it's like casually just throwing out hundreds of dollars. And I'm just like, yeah, great. Uh-huh. But it's like with this, it's so different. I don't know why. Maybe because I don't know. I have to be my own.
Why do you think it is so different?
I don't know why it's so different. I mean, I think even with the acting stuff, that's brand new. I'm kind of leveling up into a new category or whatever. So mm-hmm. I have had to get used to that too. But I think it's so normal the way my agents and like the everyone's talking about it so normally that I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of just how it is. And so I think that's what I have to do with this. And it helps the way, like, you, this is so much of your magic too, because you just kind of make it normal. You're like, yeah, we're creating cash flow and it's not that big of a deal. Like, it's important and it takes time and practice and stuff, but like, we can all kind of just get into this being a normal thing. So I don't know.
Yeah. And the fact that you have agents and managers as part of your team, you're sort of borrowing their, oh, this is just kind of normal. These are the numbers we think is legit and should be received by you. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing your own thing and setting your own rates, it's sort of like, who's there to give you permission? Like, who? I'm just going to decide this based on what? And then where our brain goes is to our worth. Oh, who are you to ask for that much money? You know, and then our brain gets involved. Yeah. So,
But yeah, I feel like I'm really like taking so many good steps, even this past year and this coming year. I feel like I'm really all of the mindset work and abundance bound. And now this program are just helping me so much kind of own my financial life as something that's can be really lucrative and is fun and maybe even easy. Like, wow, what a concept.
Right. Right. And what I love most is sitting here. You're a working actor. We don't know. You could get another job. And it just, this breathwork thing, you just actually never actually do it or need to do it or do it for a while. Like, but you just considering it and thinking about the money and going through the thoughts that you've gone through over the past week, you've increased your business muscles.
Yeah.
So wherever you're doing business, in your acting career, not in your acting career, you're getting stronger. And that's all I care about. It's like, I love that you are just getting to be a stronger businesswoman. My favorite thing from our initial conversation was the perspective shift of like, oh, maybe I shouldn't look at the numbers. Of like, no, or maybe you should work on your mindset so that you can look at the numbers, because that will change your life. It's not just about creating cash flow. I'm always like, how does this change your life?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm so happy you're liking what you're hearing in that.
I am. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's crazy that I said that. I've been thinking about that a lot this week. I'm like, I can't believe just like what, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was that I said, like, maybe the solution to my problem is that I don't even look at the numbers. And I really thought that was true. Like, I really was considering that. And you were like, no. And as soon as you said that, I was like, oh yeah, of course. I want to be a person that knows what's going on. So yeah, thank you.
And yeah. And by the way, I knew that already. You come across as someone who wants to be a strong business advocate for herself in this industry. And I'm just like, yes, that is the direction to go in. So very happy.
Oh, thank you, Christine.
Yeah, welcome. And congratulations on the booking.
Thank you so much. Yay. Thank you.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Exciting. Evan, anybody else How's it going, Evan? I am trying to put you on the spot, but you do not have to be put on the spot. Don't be bullied.
Okay. No worries. Like it's no questions this week, but just a victory that last week, Monday, I finally submitted my contract after it went through review from my lawyer legal services at Legal Shield, actually, finally put something together that I was comfortable with. And I sent that off to my client, and they confirmed that they received it and would try to get back to me at the end of last week, which they haven't. I presume that they're going through now their own legal review process and all that, which is fine. So now it's in their court, and I am waiting to see what happens next, if it's going to be approved and signed, or if they have comments that they want addressed in a next draft of the contract, which is also fine. That's part of the process. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And we don't have time today, but I just want to offer this to you because I want to make sure you're also like looking for your next client. Mm. So I want to, if you would like to talk about, okay, well, how do we get the next one?
Okay.
We can totally.
I'll keep that in mind for the next coaching session for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Anybody else?
I have something.
Elizabeth.
I have been reading this lovely book called Effortless. Maybe some of you have heard about it, but I love it. And yes. It is my default to make things way harder and more complex and grow every obstacle I can and stick it in my way. And so anyway, I'm like, how can I make things easier? And I'm just tired of dealing with chasing people who say they're interested and then they book and then they don't pay. And then I'm like, I guess we're not having this session, just kidding. And anyway, I'm just, how can I make this easier? And I just thought 2 years ago, it was easier when I worked with Leslie Kahn. So I reached out to them again and just said, let's do something online because we're not getting back to the in-person thing. So I'm still waiting to hear back and questioning a little bit about my email, since I probably could have done it more the way you said, of just saying how much I loved it before and what value I brought. But I basically was just saying, are you interested in this again? So I'm hoping to follow up tomorrow with a phone call probably and hopefully see if that can do something. And I'm also looking at taking some other job because I just have this been in my wheels for a while. So that's all. Just good news on that, I guess.
Thank you. That's Greg McKeown's new book, Effortless, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Greg McKeown, who wrote Essentialism.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. One of my all-time favorites. Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. This one's good too. I have not read it yet. It's on my list, but it's a good realization to have. Just
making things, I think I kept trying to reorganize and now I'm like, I need to take stuff off the plate.
And not work, let those people go and eventually not even have them enter your orbit. Mm-hmm. Unless they're very serious. And it's interesting because I've had so many different combinations of things I've done for money in my life. And at one time I had like three different jobs, just jobs at the same time, just putting the money together. And sometimes just having that income take the edge off, and it allows you to be more choosy in your business and to hold your boundaries in your business a lot better. Cause it's like, I don't need to work with you as a client, but if you want to pay me this, I'll totally work with you as a client, but I also have my bills covered over here. So
I think I've been telling myself a story that it's stepping backward.
Right.
Cause I stepped away from being an employee 10 years ago. And now it's like, I don't really want to do that. So it feels like a step backward, but I think it's the step maybe to the side, which will help me go forward.
Yeah. the step backwards, and I was thinking about this and didn't mention it with Anise, but there's no moral judgment around getting a job, having a job versus being entrepreneurial. It's just whatever fits into your life best. Creating cash flow, this is just one option. Jobs are also a fine option, and different things are good at different times in your life, and our lives shift. So the best thing you can do for yourself right now is create a different story around you getting a job, because it isn't a step back. That's a story. That's all that is a story. So I like you have the startings of a new story of like, oh, well, it's just a step to the side that's going to help me then regroup and blah, blah. Yeah. And that's great. So the better you can feel, here's the trick. The worst thing you can do is try to go out there and get a job. No, the second worst thing you can do is to go out there and try to get a job feeling like it's defeat and it's a step backwards. The worst thing you can do is go out there and get a job feeling like it's defeat, because then you're just going to be miserable and the job is probably going to be not great. So what you want to do is be like, nope, this is the right thing for me to do. Here's how it can benefit me. It's not a forever thing. It's going to help me in a lot of ways. And I'm a different person than I was before. And I'm going to use the resource of this money coming in wisely so I can get out of it faster. It's a stepping stone. That's all I'm using it. And when you can now, with that attitude and that story in your mind, now go look for a job. You'll have a completely different energy about it. And you're likely to get a better fit for you, of people who like you and care for you and are happy that you're working for them, but also will set you free when you're ready to go. And it's not going to be weird and blah, blah, blah. And if it's gross and weird and you don't like it, leave, go get something else. Like, this is also an opportunity for you to practice feeling like you deserve to be respected and, you know, treated well for everything you're bringing to the plate, including your emotional intelligence and emotional maturity, which not a lot of people have. Like, that's a huge asset to any workplace. So it's like, yeah, this is going to be good. And I'm going to find my right fit and onward. That's the energy.
Onward. Thank you.
Onward. It's the only option, really. Okay. Onward. Yep. I'm very glad. Thank you for sharing that with me. I like to know what's going on with you.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, everybody. I will see you next week on Monday, I believe. All right. Take care. Happy
February. Thank you.
Thanks,
everybody.
Thank you.
Good seeing you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kate. Bye. Hi, Kate.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.